The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I just found out I'm supposed to be someplace else right now. So my sincere apologies, but I simply won't be able to introduce today's host,
Mr. Eric Metaxas.
You know what? That's fine. I need no introduction. The people who listen to this program well know who it is that hosts the program. You can tell there's a clue in the name of the program. The name of the program is the Eric Metaxas Show. And the first two words, Eric Metaxas, gives you your answer. I am Eric Metaxas. That's all you need to know. I'm the host of this program, and it is a joy always to be the host of the program because I get to talk to incredibly interesting people about incredibly interesting things on the widest array of subjects imaginable. It's the show about everything. Today, I get to talk about something that I'm really excited about, biblical archaeology. Folks, if you if you've listened to this program, you've heard me talk about this a little bit here and there. If you listen to Breakpoint, which I do with John Stone Street, you go to breakpoint.org. We have commentaries every single day at breakpoint.org, and often on those we touch on biblical archaeology. But we haven't dealt with it much on this show in depth until today. I get to talk to Gordon Govier. I think
Hi,
I pronounced it. Did I pronounce it slightly correctly, Gordon?
You were very close, yes.
What is it?
You.
What is it, Gordon?
Govier. Straight English, no French affectation.
Govier? Can I say
yes.
Govier?
That's not it.
But I can say it. You can't stop me. It's my show. Govier. But it's really Govier. Gordon Govier. Gordon, we heard from you a couple of weeks ago. You are someone that has been into biblical archaeology for 35 years. I know that you produce a weekly radio program called The Book and the Spade. And I have in front of me right here in the studio two copies of this quarterly archaeology magazine called Artifacts, A-R-T-I-F-A-X, Artifacts, that you produce with a couple of college professors. And you write on archaeology for Christianity Today. You have all the credentials you need to be a guest on this program. And we are thrilled to talk to you about biblical archaeology. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Eric. I'm glad to join you.
It's a subject that I don't even know where to start. I mean, there are people listening who know a lot about this, and there are people listening who know nothing about it. Let me start here and say that what has impressed me since I became a Christian in the late 80s is that there is more and more and more archaeological evidence for the historicity of the Bible. Every time I turn around, there's a new article proving that the words in the Bible are based on historical facts, and we have archaeology, more and more making this case very, very clear. I know you know that's true, but I just want my audience to know that the Christian faith is an historical faith. If it didn't really happen, then I don't care about it. If it's just a bunch of fairy tales, it makes my life a little bit better. That's not Christianity. Christianity is an historical faith. And you have been involved in that world for many years. Now, I have to ask you your background. How did you get involved in biblical archaeology? What's your background?
Well, I am not an archaeologist. I'm only a journalist, but archaeology is my specialty. And I love history and the Bible. When I was growing up, I had two library cards for the library at my hometown and my grandma's house so that I could always be reading books. And I also, when I was young, heard that if you read three chapters every day and five on the weekends, you could read through the Bible in a year. So I did that in middle school. So I love the Bible. I love history. And then in 1978, I got to go and volunteer on a dig in Israel with my college professor, Wilbur Williams of Indiana Wesleyan University. And I thought I might even become an archaeologist, but I decided afterwards, I was already working in radio news, that I was better suited to be a journalist. I felt that's what God called me to do. So I stayed in journalism, but not too long after, I started working at a Christian radio station, and one day the light went off, and I thought, you know, I might be able to do a radio program on biblical archaeology. And I was very fortunate because I'm located in Madison, Wisconsin, and the professor who was teaching the biblical archaeology course at the University of Wisconsin was a former evangelical pastor. And so we started this program. He was my perfect co-host, and we just kept doing it. And we've been doing it. I've been doing it ever since. He retired a few years ago, but it's been one of the areas where God has really blessed me in my life, because this was not a goal that I had at any one time. I just walked through the doors that God opened up.
Well, it's such a fascinating field. I'm fascinated with archaeology, very fascinated, and neither am I an archaeologist, but you don't need to be an archaeologist to know a lot about archaeology. I've been doing a lot of studying. I'm writing a book on Mycenaean, the world of the Mycenaean culture, and obviously that involves a lot of archaeology. But this is really fascinating to me to talk about biblical archaeology with you, because as I said a moment ago, we need to understand, you don't need to be a Christian, you just need to understand history. The Bible is history, and the more time that passes, and this is what's so extraordinary, the more time that passes, the more proof we have that this is not a collection of folktales. In 1850, there was no evidence in the archaeological record, for example, that the Hittite Empire ever existed. And so you have people in the latter part of the 19th century or in the mid part of the 19th century saying that there were no Hittites, and this is just everything in this Old Testament is just half made up or half remembered. And then lo and behold, in the 1870s, I can't remember his Professor Winkler, no relation to Henry Winkler, the Fonz, discovers evidence of the Hittite Empire. And since then, we have had more and more evidence being uncovered. So I want to talk to you about what's some of the latest evidence that's been uncovered, because it is so fascinating to me.
Well, there are little pieces of archaeology that fall into place. And I, as I say on my radio program, there's a new discovery almost every day. And one of the unique things about archaeology, you and I have both confessed that we're not experts, but archaeology is a very unique field in that it relies on volunteers to excavate the various sites that are under excavation, particularly the institutional digs. There are more than a dozen excavations that are planned for Israel this year by universities and the Israel Antiquities Authority and other entities. There's also salvage digs, and those don't rely on volunteers quite as much. But if you know, Harvard University has an excavation, and the University of Pennsylvania, Wheaton College, and other schools, they all ask for volunteers to come and work on their excavations. Several decades ago, I interviewed Aaron Meyer, who has been excavating at Tel Asafi, which is believed to be the Philistine city of Gath. And he, on my program, invited listeners to come and dig with him. And ever since, we've applied that to every other excavation that we've talked about, because this is a great opportunity to see for yourself how the work is done and what has been discovered. So there's news that we report in Artifacts Magazine. We have a news digest, and it's a quarterly magazine, so every 3 months it comes in the mail, and it tells you what are the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. It's very unique in that way. And, you know, I don't know where you want to start, Eric. You were talking about the Governor of Jerusalem seal that was discovered just recently, or at least announced just recently, and that's one of the latest keys to helping us understand the Bible and confirming descriptions that are in the Bible of people of importance.
Right. Well, I said earlier that I do, you know, some people know me from Breakpoint. They listen to Breakpoint every day. They say, I listen to you on the radio every day, and I ask them, and it's Breakpoint. That's just 3.5 minutes. But every day, if you don't listen to this program, or if you don't have time to listen to this program, John Stone Street, my colleague at Breakpoint and the Colson Center, we do a short commentary on almost anything from a biblical worldview. And we often go back to archaeology when anything comes up in the news. And it was just recently that the news came up of this tiny seal. We're not going to have time to talk about it in this segment. But when we come back, I want to talk to you about that, because this is only the latest. Every couple of months or whatever it is, something new comes out and my eyes pop out. I get very excited about it because we have more and more evidence. And folks, I mean, it tells you something's true when the evidence continues to move in the direction to show you that it's true, as opposed to moving in the opposite direction. So when we come back, we're going to hear more with Gordon Govier, and we're going to talk about biblical archaeology. Stick around.
Hi, I'm Victoria Hurst. My family's company, the Hurst Corporation, publishes a magazine aimed at young women called Cosmopolitan. Nicknamed Cosmo, it contains pornography that hurts kids. I oppose this and have asked the Hearst Corporation Board of Directors many times to label Cosmopolitan adult material so that it cannot be sold to anyone under 18. But the company has refused to do it. So now I have a campaign called Cosmo Hurts Kids. I'm working with legislators, law enforcement, and community groups to have all U.S. states' material harmful to minors laws enforced against Cosmo so that it cannot be sold to your kids. The National Center on Sexual Exploitation says Cosmopolitan magazine contains pornography and is harmful to minors. American Psychological Association studies prove that early exposure to sexualization has significant negative mental health consequences for underage girls. My website is CosmoHurtsKids.com. CosmoHurtsKids.com.
Hey, folks, this is Eric Metaxas, and you know I believe America was founded as a beacon of liberty for the world. As I write in my book, If You Can Keep It, if we are to keep this republic, we have to see it afresh and really understand what it is we're keeping. If you have a heart for this important idea, I want to extend a personal invitation for you to join me at the 2018 Remember America Speaker Series on Friday, April 6th at 6:30 p.m. in Lancaster, Pennsylvania at the Lancaster County Convention Center. This event is sponsored by Dayspring Christian Academy and reminds us of our unique heritage of liberty that was founded upon biblical principles and calls us to let our light so shine for others to see. Join me for an inspirational night that brings a powerful message of hope with inspiring media, choral performances, and me, Eric Metaxas, at the Remember America Speaker Series. Tickets and sponsorships are available at dayspringchristian.com or call 717-344-5584. Visit dayspringchristian.com. That's dayspringchristian.com.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper and deeper in credit card debt and you're not sure how to fix the problem? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management is a nonprofit organization that will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment. Put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges and reduce your interest rates by as much as 60%. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. It's not a loan. It's a smart way to relieve your stress, meet your obligations, and preserve your self-respect. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free, no-obligation debt analysis. 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976. If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976.
Network with thousands of Christian media professionals, ministry representatives, pastors, and business leaders at Proclaim 18, the NRB International Christian Media Convention, February 27th through March 2nd in Nashville, Tennessee. Hear speakers including Kay Arthur, Rick Warren, Eric Metaxas, Luis Palau, Joel Rosenberg, Jim Caviezel, MyPillow founder Mike Lindell, and dozens more. Gain valuable insights by attending one or more of the convention's six industry session tracks, where industry leaders will speak on digital media, radio, TV, church media, film and entertainment, and international ministry. Experience NRB's massive exposition, featuring tools and services to expand and enhance your organization, church, or ministry. From media and fundraising experts to publishers and tech companies, the exposition has what you're looking for. Also on the expo floor will be an exhibit from Museum of the Bible, Proclaim 18, February 27th through March 2nd. For all the details, visit nrbconvention.org.
Yeah, hey. Once I was a bogus
Okay, folks, he was once a boogie singer playing in a rock and roll band. I'm talking to Gordon Govier about biblical archaeology. But, Gordon, before we dig deeper, no pun intended, were you ever a boogie singer in a rock and roll band? Just quickly, yes or no?
No.
Okay.
But I did play rock and roll on the radio.
Okay. All right. I just want to check. We're talking about biblical archaeology. And you, sir, are an expert. If people want to find out more about you, what is the website they should go to on this subject?
I have a website, radioscribe.com, and that connects to the Book and the Spade website for my radio program. I also connect to a website for Artifacts magazine. The actual website for Artifacts is called BibleArtifacts.com. That's BibleArtifacts.com, and you can subscribe online through PayPal to this magazine.
Okay.
That I'm privileged to work with a couple of college professors on producing it every quarter of the year.
This stuff is endlessly fascinating. So let's just start with the most recent thing, the thing that I talked about at breakpoint.org, this seal. This is a small thing, literally, and in every sense. It's not a gigantic find, but it's exciting when you know the details. So tell us about this seal.
Well, it is a very small thing. So you have in ancient history the practice of sealing communications or other important things. In the Bible, they sealed the tomb after Jesus was buried. And that was typically done by an official who had a piece of carved stone, maybe, or some other carving that had an image or words on it. They would press that in clay or some other medium, and that would be an official stamp that people could not break unless they wanted to get into trouble.
It had the authority of the Roman Empire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the case of Jesus and his tomb, exactly. And there were officials in ancient Judah and Jerusalem, and actually, we don't have a lot of the actual seals themselves, but we do have the seal impressions. They're called bullae, and they're in clay. A lot of times, a city would be destroyed by fire, and that would actually fire the clay and help preserve them. And there have been many of these found in the City of David area of Jerusalem, the oldest part of Jerusalem. And recently, they announced the finding of this seal impression that has the word governor in it, or they understood it. The Hebrew script is sarir, and they understood it to mean ancient Hebrew for governor of the city. And there's several places in Second Kings and Second Chronicles where the governor of the city is actually mentioned in Scripture, the governor of Jerusalem. And so this is another tiny confirmation of that particular scriptural reference.
I love it, as I was saying before, that the evidence continues to grow. And I love it when you see the trend. The trend is unmistakable. Since I became a Christian seriously in 1988, I have read innumerable articles in the New York Times, for example, about these finds that continually seem to move in one direction. I don't ever read of anything, even in something like the New York Times, that moves in the other direction, that says they've discovered something which debunks the scripture. Over and over again, there is evidence the steel where there's a mention of the house of David. That's one of the big ones. That's got to be about 15 years ago now. But there was never any mention in the archaeological record of the king of a King David. And there it is. So suddenly now we know from archaeology this is real.
That is actually the oldest reference to a biblical person now that exists. Before that, it was Omri, the king of the northern kingdom. And now we have this archaeological reference to David. It's called the House of David inscription that was found at Tel Dan in 1993. And certainly is one of the most important recent discoveries in biblical archaeology, because there is a great debate going on between archaeologists over whether David and Solomon were actual important people as described in the Bible, or maybe a minor chieftain, and Jerusalem was just a small city. And that debate started at just about the time that this inscription or that debate flourished, I guess you'd say, but when this inscription was found, that just changed the direction of the debate. It's still going on, by the way, and there's still new discoveries that are being found, but you are absolutely right. There's no discoveries that send the debate in the other direction. Large finds, little finds, they all seem to corroborate what the Bible says. And it was over a half a century ago when one of the great archaeologists of that time, Nelson Glick, said that it may be stated categorically that no archaeological discovery has ever controverted a biblical reference. And a few months ago, I asked Stephen Ortiz, a modern archaeologist who has been excavating at Tel Gezer, is that still true? And he said, yes, it is. Now, it's also true that the archaeology has helped correct some of the wrong assumptions we had about the Bible. And that's really one of the great values of archaeology for us as Christians and Bible scholars. You know, we don't have to prove the Bible. The Bible stands on its own, you know, and we haven't had to wait 2,000 years until modern archaeology came along to prove that the Bible is true. It's proved in the experience of individual Christians every day. But what it does do is give us new facts to help us interpret and understand the Bible better. And one of the archaeologists that I interviewed several years ago said the only new facts about the Bible are coming from the ground through archaeology. And I know, listening to your radio program, I know you're very interested in the facts and finding out the truth and what is true. And archaeology helps us do that.
Well, I have to, since you brought it up, I was just laughing because you sent us an email here at the program saying that you listened to the program, and I was thrilled. And then to find out what you do, I would have discovered you independently, I'd like to think, of your reaching out to us. But you said you listened to this program every day on your daily walk.
Just about every day. I live about 45 minutes from work. And so if I download your podcast and listen to your podcast, by the time the Doobie Brothers come on, I know I should be walking through my front door.
I love the idea that somebody like you are listening to this program. But I just had to mention that because it just cracked me up when I read it, that when you hear the Doobie Brothers, you should be home. And that sounds true of all of life, doesn't it? When you hear the Doobie Brothers, you should be home. But
well, the Doobie Brothers are coming to Madison this summer. I just found out the tickets are going on sale.
To Wisconsin, where you live, to Madison?
Absolutely, yeah.
Unbelievable. Okay. I've never seen them in concert. I feel like I'd be disappointed, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's very true. Certainly, that was one of their greatest songs.
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, so when did – you know, I referred to the Winkler discovery of the Hittite Empire in 1876, I think it was. That's pretty – you know, it's a big deal because archaeology is a very recent science. I mean, you know, 500 years ago, there was no archaeology. It's only in the last couple of hundred years that archaeology has become a thing. And as long as archaeology has existed, it seems to me that we keep finding things. But that was one of the first dramatic ones, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And that was really before the time that archaeology became a science. In the 19th century, archaeology was mostly about finding stuff, you know, sensational discoveries, treasure hunters, basically. And you had these European treasure hunters who were floating down the Nile and walking through the Holy Land and finding things and thinking maybe this relates to the Bible or finding some reason that it might relate to the Bible and sending some of what they found back to the museums in Europe and America. And there are still some people that kind of operate like that today, might call them faux archaeologists, but
right.
they find something and they think, you know, this looks like something from the Bible. This looks like, you know, they go to the Red Sea and they find something that looked like it might be a chariot wheel. And to them, that proves that the Bible is true. Well, archaeology has developed a long ways beyond that. And we have much better methods.
Right.
And we can confirm things a lot better than that.
Well, it's fascinating to think that archaeology is that recent. I mean, I've done a lot of reading on Heinrich Schliemann. And, you know, he really was at first a treasure hunter. He was digging kind of scandalously destroying things as he's digging to find what he wants to find. And it wasn't really archaeology until the end of the 19th century when Dorpfeld and others got involved. We're going to be right back talking archaeology with Gordon Govier from Wisconsin. We'll be right back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
Theaters now from PureFlix.
Samson, chosen by the living God.
A hero will rise.
He has the strength of a god. I saw it with my own eyes.
My name is Samson, and you will face the wrath of God.
Samson, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. For tickets and information, go to samson.movie.
You wouldn't put a square peg in a round hole, so why would you deploy a traditional firewall in a modern decentralized network? Firewalls have new requirements for businesses leveraging SaaS-based applications and public cloud platforms like AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud. We're in the cloud generation now, so your firewalls have to be engineered to fit right in. Reclaim your cloud network. Try a Barracuda Cloud Generation Network or application firewall free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
For young people who want to make the most of their summer, there's the Summer Academy at the King's College in New York City. At Summer Academy, inquisitive high schoolers learn how the great ideas of Western civilization apply to journalism, business, economics, and leadership, all from a biblical worldview. Plus, they'll enjoy world-famous landmarks and museums. One student called it the learning experience of a lifetime. To learn more, Google the King's College Summer Academy. That's the King's College Summer Academy.
Hello, I'd like to deposit this to checking.
Fate is a fickle master.
What?
The future is uncertain.
Okay, and what's my account balance?
The horizon is cloudy. I see a long, treacherous voyage filled with great peril.
Look, can I just get a deposit slip or something?
A fortune bank teller. Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to GEICO.
I see a yellow-eyed serpent.
What?
And a low APR.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Doesn't know that biblical archaeology and funk go together. In case you didn't know, we're here to prove it to you. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking with Gordon Govier. Gordon, there's so much to talk about. What are the holy grails of biblical archaeology? In other words, they're all kinds of things are being discovered over and over and over again wherever you look. But there are big things that may be still that they haven't been unearthed yet by the archaeologist's shovel. What are some of those things? Like Noah's Ark? I don't know. The skull of Moses? What are we looking for?
Well, Noah's Ark certainly has to rank up there. People are still searching for Noah's Ark. And I was quite convinced by what Hugh Ross said several weeks ago on your program. You know, I think that they probably will not find it because they're looking in the wrong place. It's not on Mount Ararat. It's somewhere else in the mountains of Ararat.
Right.
But there is a tradition that developed. And my thought is that there is an obvious... some kind of a black rock formation or something near the top of Mount Ararat that the people several thousand years ago saw and said, well, that must be Noah's Ark. And that's kind of how their tradition got associated with that individual mountain. I don't know, but there have been people who have gone up on Mount Ararat and said that they discovered Noah's Ark. The problem is when they go back or when somebody else goes back, they don't find it. And that's kind of one of the important parts of science. You have to be able to reproduce what you discover.
Yeah, that always helps. Okay,
what about
the skull of Moses?
The skull of Moses, I have no idea what you're talking about in that case.
No.
And we don't typically find skulls of famous people. We find skulls, but usually we can't know exactly what that person's name is.
I'm just blowing smoke. I was hoping to get something out of you. I have to say, though, that we don't know what we're going to find, but what are the kinds of things that we might find, or what are some of the more dramatic finds? Have we ever found anything along the lines of a body as large as Goliath of Gath? His brother is also mentioned in Scripture. There were huge figures, or at least that's what the Scripture tells us. And I know there's something about the Anakim and the Rephaim, these biblical giants. There's an article in an issue of your magazine from last year, and I wanted to touch on that.
Okay. Right offhand, off the top of my head, I can't think of any. There probably have been. Sometimes they may have been sensationalized. I'm not exactly sure. What they have found in relation to Goliath, several years ago, Aaron Meyer, working at Tel Asafi, the city of Gath, which was Goliath's hometown, found a potsherd with some writing on it, it was called an ostracon, and it's very common because in the ancient times, broken pieces of pottery were like a notepad that you just wrote something that you wanted to remember. And on this particular ostracon,
because there was no paper.
Right.
Yeah.
On this particular ostracon, they found the name of a person which they said was very close to Goliath. Linguistically, it was almost the same thing as Goliath, which was a big announcement for the time. So, you know, there's some evidence for Goliath at the city of Gath.
And I know they found something, a coin with Samson on it. I can't remember. I read this for Breakpoint about a year ago now. But all kinds of stuff coming up. I know that there was an ossuary that was discovered, maybe it's 5 years ago, that they believed was Caiaphas, the high priest in the gospel accounts, and that they found an ossuary.
Yeah, the most famous ossuary in recent biblical archaeology history is the ossuary that had the inscription, James, the son of Joseph, the brother of Jesus. And that developed into a major controversy because the authorities believed that the ossuary was authentic, but the inscription was a forgery. And so it actually went to trial. It was one of the longest trials in archaeological history, probably, and maybe Israeli history. In the end, they could not prove that the inscription was forged, and they couldn't prove that it was authentic either. So that particular ossuary is kind of in limbo.
Okay, now to be clear, we're talking about first century ossuaries, and an ossuary is something that holds the bones of the deceased. They were not buried in graves, or if they were buried, they were exhumed, and then the bones are put in an ossuary. Typically in antiquity, that's what they did.
It's a carved bone box, usually out of stone, and about a year after a person was put into a tomb, the relatives would go back and collect the bones and put them in an ossuary and then put them back in the tomb. This is a tradition that mainly dates to the first century of Israel.
Well, it's funny because I know that in the Mycenaean world, just because I have a tiny bit of experience in that world, they did the same thing. They would bury people, and then they didn't have room in the tomb, and they would gather the bones and put them in an ossuary. But the ossuary of Caiaphas, that is considered to be real, or we don't know?
That is authentic as far as it's believed to be authentic in a much stronger way than the ossuary of James, the brother of Jesus. And that was found in the Jerusalem Peace Forest back, I think, around 1990. They uncovered a tomb that had maybe up to a dozen ossuaries, and they found the inscription in the side of this bone box that actually said Caiaphas. And it's on display in the Israel Museum now.
It's just amazing. We're going to be right back, folks. We're talking about biblical archaeology with Gordon Govier. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Stick around.
All through the morning rain again, the sun doesn't shine. Rainbows and waterfalls.
Hey, Albin.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, can I talk to you about Relief Factor?
Please do.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
I don't want you just to say that.
No, I'm not just saying that. Please.
I want you to take off. You're not my employee right now.
Okay.
You're just a friend. Can I talk to you about Relief Factor?
Please do.
Okay. Relief Factor is something that I take for pain, okay? I have low-level pain. I'm not talking about searing, life-changing, horrible pain. Although, you know what? Now that I mention it, if you have low-level pain like a 2 or a 3 on the scale of 1 to 10, I think it does change your life because you just do things differently. You're, you know, so I take Relief Factor and I'm recommending it to my audience because if you're just taking it for granted that this is your new life, I would say don't. Relief Factor, these are botanicals. It's not like something toxic like Advil or whatever that's going to mess your liver if you mess up your liver if you take it over and over and over again. You can take this like crazy and it's totally safe. ReliefFactor.com is the website, ReliefFactor.com. Get the quick start pack for $19.95. Within 3 weeks, you will know whether this works. I recommend it, folks. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com.
Hi, I'm Victoria Hurst. My family's company, the Hearst Corporation, publishes a magazine aimed at young women called Cosmopolitan. Nicknamed Cosmo, it contains pornography that hurts kids. I oppose this and have asked the Hearst Corporation Board of Directors many times to label Cosmopolitan adult material so that it cannot be sold to anyone under 18. But the company has refused to do it. So now I have a campaign called Cosmo Hurts Kids. I'm working with legislators, law enforcement, and community groups to have all U.S. states' material harmful to minors laws enforced against Cosmo so that it cannot be sold to your kids. The National Center on Sexual Exploitation says Cosmopolitan magazine contains pornography and is harmful to minors. American Psychological Association studies prove that early exposure to sexualization has significant negative mental health consequences for underage girls. My website is CosmoHurtsKids.com. CosmoHurtsKids.com.
Hey, folks, this is Eric Metaxas, and you know I believe America was founded as a beacon of liberty for the world. As I write in my book, If You Can Keep It, if we are to keep this republic, we have to see it afresh and really understand what it is we're keeping. If you have a heart for this important idea, I want to extend a personal invitation for you to join me at the 2018 Remember America Speaker Series on Friday, April 6th at 6:30 p.m. in Lancaster, Pennsylvania at the Lancaster County Convention Center. This event is sponsored by Dayspring Christian Academy and reminds us of our unique heritage of liberty that was founded upon biblical principles and calls us to let our light so shine for others to see. Join me for an inspirational night that brings a powerful message of hope with inspiring media, choral performances, and me, Eric Metaxas, at the Remember America Speaker Series. Tickets and sponsorships are available at dayspringchristian.com or call 717-344-5584. Visit dayspringchristian.com. That's dayspringchristian.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-651-4888 now. That's 800-651-4888 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-651-4888 to learn more. 800-651-4888. That's 800-651-4888. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
I hate to break in on the funk, but we're talking about biblical archaeology with Gordon Govier. Gordon, if people want to know more about biblical archaeology, what is the best website where they can find you?
Well, my website is radioscribe.com, and I have links there to my Book and the Spade radio program. I also have links to the magazine Artifacts, and people can subscribe online by following the links to BibleArtifacts.com.
Okay, so but the first one was?
Radioscribe.com.
Okay. Now, I have a whole list here of 10 recent biblical, or I should say that the top 10 discoveries, biblical archaeology discoveries of 2017. So in the last year, and you published this in Christianity Today, there are 10 things, and I'm reading through them. It's amazing. One of them talks about the identity of Bethsaida. It was the hometown of Peter, Andrew, and Philip. And so this is the first century city of Bethsaida. Tell us what we have discovered in the last year about Bethsaida.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the current archaeological controversies is where is Bethsaida located? For almost 25 years, or maybe it's over 25 now, an archaeologist named Rami Arav has been excavating at a site called Et Tel along the northeastern shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's actually a couple of miles from the shore itself. And he has said that this is the city of Bethsaida, which he is excavating. And since then, he's also found some remains from the time of David, which I think have turned out to be much more interesting, 1,000 years earlier. But in the meantime, just in the last year, another team of archaeologists is excavating a site called El Araj, which is very close to the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And they have found the remains of a Roman bathhouse, which seems to date to the first century. So their contention is this is the real site of Bethsaida. So right now, I think archaeologists are lining up on both sides of the argument, and it's inconclusive. And hopefully, further excavation will tell us whether one or the other, or maybe both. Sometimes the site of a city changes. So we'll see what happens.
What do you know about the discovery of Sodom and Gomorrah? Are you at all up on that? I was in Albuquerque not long ago, and I met with the man who has overseen this. I need to have him on this program, but I'm just wondering whether you know about that.
Yeah, Stephen Collins.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. He's excavating a site which most archaeologists do not believe is Sodom and Gomorrah. It's along the north side of the Sea of the Dead Sea. And I've interviewed him, and you know, I've got his rationale, and it certainly is a very important site. It's a very large site. But in order for, I think, this site to be Sodom and Gomorrah, you've got to shift some dates, which are kind of almost set in stone, set in concrete. And so I don't think that he's convinced many other archaeologists outside of those that are working on his team, that he's actually excavating Sodom and Gomorrah. Traditionally, Sodom and Gomorrah was located to the south of the Dead Sea or along the southeastern shore. And there are a couple of sites down in that area called Numeira and Babadra, which some people have suggested maybe Sodom and Gomorrah. The archaeology is close there. It doesn't quite fit, but it may be closer than what Stephen Collins is excavating at.
Well, you, I know that you do tours of the Holy Land, biblical archaeology tours. Are you doing one this year?
Yeah, in fact, we'll be going in May. We have a 14-day itinerary. It's mostly focused on Jesus, and but we cover a lot of archaeological sites, not just New Testament sites. And I'm looking forward. It's going to be exciting.
You said that's in May?
It's May 4th through the 18th, I think.
Okay, now I guess if people go to radioscribe.com, they can find out about that.
Yes, yes. And there's a lot of good tours out there, and they have different types of focus. So I would just say for people who want to go to Israel, make sure you know what kind of a tour you're getting into.
Okay. What would be a bad tour?
Some tours spend a lot of time shopping in the shops for trinkets and things like that. And when people come back, they often are disappointed that they spent more time shopping than actually looking at biblical history.
Okay. So I'm assuming that your tour is a good tour, so people can go to radioscribe.com and check it out. I'm trying to think, when we're talking biblical archaeology, what are some of the things, what are some of the places that are being, what are some of the sites that are that we might not know about, where people are hoping to find things, but of course they haven't found anything, so they haven't published it yet. So what's out there?
Yeah, there's a list that's published every year. In fact, Biblical Archaeology Review, which is a great magazine, and we feel that our magazine is complementary to what they do. We're not exactly the same. Every January, February issue, they publish a list of the planned excavations for the coming year, and it's been a tradition on my radio program to talk about the sites on that list. So, for instance, we've already mentioned the site of Gezer. Gezer is under a focus of two different archaeological excavations, one just concluded last year after 10 years in the field, and the other one that's going on is, in my mind, a little bit more intriguing because they're excavating some kind of a water system right next to the Canaanite gate, the Middle Bronze gate of Gezer. And this is the oldest water system that has been found in Israel so far. And there's water systems in Jerusalem, in Hatzor, Megiddo, some other famous archaeological sites. This one is older. And you'd think it was for people to go and get water and take it, you know, back to their homes. That's how they did it in those days. But maybe this is more of a cultic type of thing. And so I'm really looking forward to finding out what archaeologists discover there.
There's so much. That's what's exciting about it. We don't know what's out there. We're going to be right back, folks, talking to Gordon Govier.
Now, from PureFlix.
Samson, chosen by the living God.
A hero will rise.
He has the strength of a god. I saw it with my own eyes.
My name is Samson, and you will face the wrath of God.
Samson, rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. For tickets and information, go to samson.movie.
For young people who want to make the most of their summer, there's the Summer Academy at the King's College in New York City. At Summer Academy, inquisitive high schoolers learn how the great ideas of Western civilization apply to journalism, business, economics, and leadership, all from a biblical worldview. Plus, they'll enjoy world-famous landmarks and museums. One student called it the learning experience of a lifetime. To learn more, Google the King's College Summer Academy. That's the King's College Summer Academy.
You like freedom? I do. You like money? Well, I do too. If you like freedom and money, then you're going to love Freedom Checks. You see, over the next few months, an estimated $34.6 billion is up for grabs to anyone who stakes their claim. Yep, you heard that right. $34.6 billion. To get all the details, just go to www.freedomchecks123.com. Thousands of people are already lined up to cash in. Take Doug, for example. He's a 46-year-old from Joplin, Missouri, who's set to get a check for $24,075. And if Doug can do this, I've got a hunch that you can too. But here's the thing. If you want the chance to grab your full fair share of this $34.6 billion payout, you must have your ducks in a row by March 1st. So don't wait. Get over to www.freedomchecks123.com before the March 1st deadline. That's freedomchecks123.com.
Oh! Woo! I'm back! Get up off of that thing and dance with you, you better. Get up off of that thing and dance with you. Sing it now. Get up off of that thing.
What thing? What thing do I need to get off of? What thing? Hey, James Brown, what thing? Ladies and gentlemen, if you do not equate biblical archaeology with funk, you are in the majority. But some of us do, and I'm just saying that's the way it is. We only have a few minutes left today with Gordon Govier. Gordon, it really is exciting to talk about this because there is just so much. We can go in any direction. Since we have a couple of minutes left, what should we touch on?
Well, there is a lot of things to talk about in biblical archaeology, and I don't exactly know what to say either, but I would just say about the top 10 list that we're just talking about, this is something that I feel privileged to do for Christianity Today every year, is to kind of look at some of the archaeological discoveries of the past year, and I guess the ranking is arguable, you know, and I would agree with that. But what we are saying with this list is that here are 10 discoveries that have been made or announced in the last year, and they all help us understand the Bible better, and that's what's important.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we're getting more and more information. It's giving more and more and more clarity. So that we don't have to guess. Every year something else comes up, or 10 things come up, or 20 things come up, and the picture, it's like a picture that's becoming more and more in focus.
One of the neatest stories that I've been a part of for the last couple of years, in 1972, a synagogue was excavated at En Gedi on the shore of the Dead Sea, and most notably they found a beautiful mosaic dating to the Byzantine period, and they're finding these all over Israel. They also found a cinder. This was apparently some kind of a document, but it couldn't be read by the technology of that find, and it couldn't be read until recently Brent Seals came along. Brent Seals is the head of the computer science department at the University of Kentucky. He got his PhD at the University of Wisconsin, and he has developed software that virtually unrolls ancient scrolls that are too damaged to be read otherwise.
I saw this someplace on, I guess somebody sent me a link to an explanation of this. This is mind-blowing stuff.
It is.
This is truly mind-blowing. In other words, you could have a charred ancient scroll. It just looks like you're never going to get anything out of this. And they managed to, with software, read what is on this scroll that looks to be damaged forever.
And they found, in this case, the book of Leviticus. It's the oldest biblical document outside of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the oldest Masoretic text of the Bible. And he was able to read a CAT scan that the Israel Antiquities Department had done. They actually, I think, heard about his work. They did their own scan. They couldn't make sense of it. So they sent him all the data on a computer hard drive. He plugged it into his computer and plugged in his software and started, after many weeks of working on it, he couldn't read the Hebrew. So he made the text available to the authorities back in Jerusalem, and they said, yeah, this is the book of Leviticus.
It's incredible. Because we have you on the program and because we're closing, we're not going to close with the Doobie Brothers today. We figure we can do something more funky, and of course, at all of the times, we'll end with the Doobie Brothers. Thank you so much, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
Thank you.
To spend my life with you. And they say it seems, baby, since we've been together. Ooh, loving you forever.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.